All right. Thank you, Susanna. I'll talk a little bit about some work that I've been doing with Danthonius baqueta. Danthonia is a pretty common grass on the east coast of the United States, under lawn situations, far more common than people probably realize. This is a old lawn. This is where you commonly find it, under trees. It looks a lot like perennial ryegrass in its leaf width and its appearance, but it's much more drought tolerant, much more shade tolerant, and really quite well adapted to the tree cover that we find on the East Coast often. It has some unique reproductive characteristics. It produces these cleistogamous seed heads in the axis of the flowering stem. These typically are completely enclosed by the leaf, so you have to dig to find them. I've pulled this one out in this situation. Then it produces terminal seed heads. In the literature, you often hear these referred to as cleistogamous seed heads and these as chasmogamous seed heads. But the story is a little more complicated. I've shown a flowering head here. This is not the typical situation that you find in a greenhouse with normal anther production and lodicles functioning normally in the flower opening. What's more typical is what you see in this terminal floret here, which is the lodicles didn't function, the floret doesn't open, you don't have normal anther production, yet you get seed produced. I often call this magic seed because where did it come from? When you look at that, I took that terminal floret off and dissected it. You get this extremely precocious seed production. The anthers, you can see them here, they're very tiny, extremely small. Pollen production, there's no pollen. Stigmas are shriveled and shrunken. So there's no pollination that has occurred here, yet you get seed production. When I take a look at those anthers under microscope, stain them with toluidine blue, two locules instead of the normal tetrasporangiate anthers, and really very little pollen, maybe 15 to 20 pollen grains, and none of it, you can find no evidence for pollination to have occurred. So we've looked at populations with SSRs. This gel here represents parents and progeny from four different populations, and we see no variation at SSR loci, just extremely homozygous across all populations that we've looked at. And we've looked at meiotic chromosome pairing as well. It has 18 bivalents, and the pairing is extremely tight, all closed bivalents, indicating that the genome is probably extremely homogeneous. So the question that arises there is, how does a plant that's adapted to really harsh conditions persist under those conditions without any sexual reproduction that we can determine? And one of the ways, the hypothesis that I have, is that it uses an extended genome. In other words, it interacts with the microbial environment in order to induce some of those resistances to stress that it encounters. We know a number of fungi are important to plants for tolerance to, or for disease resistance, trichodermas, gliocalladiums, Pseudomonas and bacillus. These are often used as amendments to soils to help with disease resistance and so forth. Interestingly, gliocalladium was originally thought, if you go back to the pre-alkaloid endophyte work, it was originally thought to be an endophyte because it's readily associated with grass plants. But we don't talk about it much in association. I've seen trichodermas and gliocalladiums readily associated with Danthonia seed, so these are being transmitted from one generation to the next. We also have our typical endophytes, seed-associated bacteria that often interact with plants. There's mycorrhizae, both ecto and abuscular mycorrhizae, that help with nutrient uptake. So these things may be operating to essentially extend the genome of Danthonia to make it tolerant of the harsh conditions that it experiences. Now, if you take Danthonia seed and just put it out on a petri dish, you get more fungi than you'd ever want to see. I mean, it's just loaded with fungi. They grow like crazy. And this seed is actually, it's like it's candy for fungi. It's not a typical endosperm. You can put these seed in water and you don't get normal breakdown like you do with an amylose endosperm. They remain hard in water. It's very much like a waxy endosperm that's encountered with corn. Fractures along a typical in a typical way like a waxy endosperm. Now you can readily remove the lemma and palea from these seed and get the naked seed. So we were interested in finding out what microbes might be vertically transmitted. In other words, if we take these naked seed and thoroughly sterilize them, then germinate seedlings and look at the seedlings microscopically, can we find vertically transmitted microbes? So we surface sterilize these, 25 minutes in ethanol, sterile water rinse, and you have to be really careful to make sure your water's sterile because, like I said, these things are like candy to fungi, and if you have any microbes in your water, they'll grow all over the seed. So you have to autoclave your water and filter sterilize it, put it through Clorox, and then sterilize again. And we can get essentially sterile germinating seed. So we stain these seed for we clear them with potassium hydroxide, and we stain with an ink stain or with a toluidine blue stain. And we readily get fungi that are associated with these plants. Here you can see this fungal associate here and a hyphae growing. Again, hyphae associated with these plants. More hyphae. This appears to be an embryo transmitted fungus associated with the plants, but quite a very tight relationship with the seedlings. It also has an epiphytic component. This is on the outside of the leaf. You can see the hyphae growing in that situation. We looked at a total. I just did as many as I could, 82 seeds. We had 68 of those germinated. I looked at all 68 for hyphae, and all of them have hyphae present. So there's fungal associations that are happening through vertical transmission with this species. Just to go some of the previous work, Agnes Chase, she was the first one to describe cleistogamy in this species. Paul Weatherwax did some good work showing the pollen, the anther dimorphism that occurs with this species as well. There's a number of papers by Keith Clay. Most of them don't really mention the anther dimorphism. And they focus a lot on Atkinsonella hypoxylon, which is a claviceps fungus that's associated with the grass. I find it causes choke. I find choke in some populations, not many. When it does occur, it occurs at a pretty high level. But none of the plant material that I've worked with has shown choke ever. And this is the seedlings that I showed you. That's the third generation of seedlings there. So I don't really feel that this fungus is what we're seeing, or at least I've never seen choke from it. Then Phillipson did some really good work. It kind of, my work seems to go along with what she's said. She reemphasized that we have these terminal florets that don't function normally. They don't open, and yet they do produce seed. She described an epiphytic endophytic fungus that's associated and transmitted through the embryo sac. And she suggested that apomixis may be occurring here. So in conclusion, I think when we consider Danthonia, we need to consider the kind of extended genome and what microorganisms are associating with this grass and how they might be working to allow it to establish its role in the environment in terms of being able to persist with low nutrients and droughty conditions and so forth. For future work, we'd like to do some metagenomics to find out what microorganisms are there and potentially to also look at what those microorganisms might be doing in interacting with the plant and how they're able to help it persist under the harsh conditions. And we'd also like to create microbe-free plants to see what those plants behave like. in the flowers that I showed you earlier, when you have normal anther production, you get no seed production. So I think if you remove this fungus or whatever is causing these anthers to not function, this plant essentially is sterile. It's not able to produce seed. So it's kind of an unusual situation. So that's all. If there's any questions?
Plenty of time for questions.
Do you have any idea what type of fungi are growing in the Antonia?
No, we're working on that to try to figure out what species it is. The interesting thing, there may be also bacteria associated with the fungi that are being transmitted to the plant as well. So there's a lot going on, even though genetically the plant doesn't appear that there's a lot going on. Outside of the genetics of the plant, there's a lot going on, I think. So.
Yes. What are the species
related to it? None in North America. There's several Danthonias in North America. Different names, the taxonomists have given different names, but it's really difficult to tell them all apart. They don't look that much different. Many of them behave at this same reproductive strategy. There are other grasses that exhibit this precocious seed development. Some of the blue stems will do that. Some of it's population specific. So this may be happening in more grasses than we realize. It's hard to know.
I have one.
Yes.
So how extensive is the collection of these things? Like, no matter where you collect, they're all pretty much the same?
Pretty much. Yes, I've collected over about 150-mile range on the East Coast, and I haven't found any genetic variability between any of those plants over that range, based on the SSR markers I've looked at.
Where are those SSRs from?
These were developed through a high-throughput sequencing run,
so
a 4-by-5.
So species-specific for Danthonia?
Okay. Yeah.
Still time for more?
In the comment, in this market.
Yes.
Okay. Even the material in Missouri, there's no variation there?
Haven't looked at Missouri. I've looked from Delaware through, Maryland. So, but none of that material has any variability. I mean, I'm certain if we looked far enough and looked hard enough, we would find variability. But I don't know that this thing is reproducing sexually at all. It may have lost the ability to do that. And as for how endosperm is developing, I don't know. It's not a normal endosperm by any means. Yes?
Do you think infected plants, compared to infected, non-infected plants, that infected may have more vegetative growth biomass versus non-infected? Any of them have?
No. I think the infection allows these plants they actually grow at a slower rate, and that's why they tolerate the harsh conditions better. Whenever we've seen instances where we get normal anther development, the plants are bigger and more robust, but we don't get seed set. So they actually behave more as an annual than they do as a perennial. Because many times these cleistogamous seeds are developed at the base of the tiller, and they will provide the source for the next generation, essentially, of plant material. It doesn't behave as a strict perennial, like you would think. And so if you lose the ability to produce those seeds, the plant doesn't persist as long.
Do you ever see it in mixtures with any other species?
Find fescue quite often.
Thanks, Scott, for the presentation.